Hey guys, I want to welcome you to the Mosaic Podcast. I'm Pastor Erwin Raphael McManus, and just wanted to thank you for listening. In case you didn't know, I just released a new book. It's called The Genius of Jesus, The Man Who Changed Everything. And you can order it today at thegeniusofjesus.com.
Have you ever had a conversation with someone and somewhere in the middle of the conversation, you forgot you were listening? And you just went somewhere else and started thinking about something else, but you were completely unaware of it. It wasn't conscious ignorance or ignoring of them. It was, you just drifted away. And then they caught you. Right? Because a lot of times you can drift back and forth, go in and out, and no one knows. You ever just put them on mute on the phone? And they're talking, and now you're talking to someone else, you're doing something else, you're going to the bathroom, you're just living life while they're talking because you realize they don't even know you're on the other end. But sometimes you're in a conversation with someone, it's a really meaningful conversation, and you should be listening, and you're not listening, and then they call you out. Where are you? You're not even listening. You're not even here. Which is, of course, a really absurd thing for my wife Kim to ask me. I mean, for someone to ask you, where are you? I'm right here. And that's usually my response. I'm right here. She says, no, you're not. You're somewhere else. But the truth is, most of the time, when you're somewhere else, you're not somewhere else. You're actually sometime else. You're not usually somewhere you're not in that moment. You're somewhere you were in the past or somewhere you hope to go in the future. And I've wondered how many times in our lives we needed to be fully present and we were mostly absent. And it's a curious thing when you think about how we humans move through time. And we think that we move through time in a cohesive fashion because we're mostly aware of our physical existence. And since you're physically here, then you feel like you're justified to say, I am fully here. But your physical reality isn't the core of who you are. And so it's odd that we would think that we're fully somewhere just because our bodies are there. I mean, after all, if you lost a leg because you stepped on a landmine, would you be any less human? No, you'd be fully human without a leg. So we know that our physical nature isn't the core of who we are. And yet we act as if we're fully present when we're physically present. Closer to our core is who we are psychologically, who we are emotionally, who we are relationally, who we are spiritually. At the core of our being, that's really the question when someone asks us, where are you? They're asking us that part of you that cannot be seen, that part of you that is in the invisible sphere of you, that part of you isn't here. You've left your body. And I wonder how many of us are traveling through this thing called history, traveling through time, but we're not fully present. And aside from just not wanting to get caught, if we could understand the power of being fully present, if we could understand that whenever we're in a moment and we're not cohesively in that moment, we're not at our full force. We're not at our full capacity. We're not at our full potential. And speaking of that, can you believe what happened to the Dodgers? The greatest regular season to be eliminated in the first round by a team that won, what, over 20 games fewer than them. There is no rational person who knows anything about baseball, and you don't even need to know anything about baseball to know this should not happen. What you know is that the Padres, who had less potential, were more present in this moment than the Dodgers, who had more potential. Somehow, the full capacity of that Dodger team did not show up. Isn't it great to be a professional athlete? Where everyone else who cannot play, who cannot compete, who cannot do, can analyze what you did wrong. And I imagine none of you are ever going to play for the Dodgers or the Padres. Although you have a better chance with the Padres. But what I do know is this. You do not have a concrete measurable to prove whether you are fully present or not. The same way that professional teams do when they win and lose publicly. when they succeed and fail publicly. But I assure you, there are measures in your life that you will look back on that will be the proof of whether you were fully present or not. I've always been drawn to this particular narrative in the book of Isaiah 43. It's one of the passages of scriptures that continually informs me. But as I was looking at this afresh, I was really struck how what God is actually telling them is, I need you to stand in this moment fully present. I need you in this moment to access the power of being fully present and to not be bifurcated between the past, the present, and the future. Which is, of course, a part of our problem, is that even though our bodies can only be in the present, the essence of who we are can actually be living in the past or living in the future. So what's left for this moment that needs all of you? In Isaiah 43, beginning in verse 15, the scriptures tell us this. God is speaking, and he lets us know by opening up by saying, I am the Lord, the Holy God, Israel's creator and king. I am the one who cut a path through the mighty oceans. I sent an army to chase you with chariots and horses. Now they lie dead, unable to move. They are like an oil lamp with the flame snuffed out. Forget what happened long ago. Do not think about the past. I'm creating something new. There it is. Do you see it? I put roads in deserts, streams in thirsty lands. Every wild animal honors me, even jackals and owls. I provide water in deserts, streams in thirsty lands for my chosen people. I made them my own nation so they would praise me. And the core of this narrative is in verses 18 and 19, where he says, forget the former things. Do not dwell in the past. See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? It's always interesting to me when God says something about himself that the people he's talking to should already know. And in a very odd way, God is giving a small part of his resume. There's no time for God to give all of his resume. But he's giving them a small part of his resume that matters for this moment in their life. But he begins by reminding them who he is in relationship to them. And then he moves to what he's done out of that relationship with them. But in all that, it's a little confusing because God is talking about a different time in history. He's talking about the time when Israel was in captivity and bondage to the Egyptians, and now it's a different time. That time has passed. And what's happening now is that Israel finds itself in captivity and bondage to the Babylonians. And they've been crying out to God for help. They've been crying out to God for freedom and deliverance. And in fact, they're at that breaking point where they are pretty much convinced God isn't going to show up. And I don't know if you've ever been there where you began with a hope that God would show up, and then you began to desperately ask God to show up, and then you finally just came to a break point because nothing happened. You just became a realist and you said, God's not going to show up. And that's actually where they're at. And so it's almost as if God's out of touch with their real problem because they're trying to get God to help them in this moment in their life, and God now is having a conversation about a past moment in their lives. He doesn't realize that God's revisiting the past, not for himself, but for them. Because they're spread out too thin. Their cellular structure is not present in that moment. A part of them is living in the past, and a part of them is living in the future, and God needs them to be fully present in this moment in time. So why does God begin here? He says, I sent an army. He says, I am the one who cut a path through the mighty ocean. I sent an army to chase you with chariots and horses. Wait. God is telling the story when God delivered Israel out of Egypt, you remember, with Moses. And it looked as if they were now going to be free. And in fact, somehow God arranged the circumstance where Pharaoh gave them his gold and silver and precious jewels. And so Israel leaves Egypt free and rich. Well, not a bad outcome. And then as they perceive themselves moving to their freedom, they come up to the sea and they're trapped against the Red Sea. And then Pharaoh changes his mind and he decides, no, I want it back and I want them back. And so he starts hunting them down. He's going to either kill them or enslave them again. And here, God says, I sent an army to chase you. God is saying, no, no, you think I'm only a part of the story that sets you free. I'm a part of the story that puts you in crisis. Because there's a bigger story to be told here. This is not the story of a people who run for their lives. This is a story of a people who are at an intersection of the impossible, and God showed up for them. He says, I'm the one who cut a path through the mighty oceans. I sent an army to chase you with chariots and horses. And then he becomes incredibly descriptive. Now they lay dead, unable to move. Have you ever seen redundancy that doesn't need to be there? He goes, most people lay dead and they're unable to move. You would go, yeah, I know he's dead, but can he move? Right? You just go, okay, that's assumed. They are like an oil lamp with the flame stuffed out. Why does God keep describing over and over again to them what happened in the past? He's telling them, put your past in the past. See, if you're going to be fully present, you have to put your past in the past. And sometimes the past you have to put in your past is the painful past. Sometimes the past you have to put in the past where you were wounded, betrayed, hurt, disappointed. That past where you failed, that past where you lost, that past where you were disappointed, that past where you felt like God let you down or people let you down. And it's hard enough to let go of past that wounded you. And it's really a challenging thing to go through the transition of allowing something that wounded you to simply become a scar. Because you have a scar doesn't mean you still have a wound. It's just a reminder that once you had a wound, but now you've healed. And saying you need to put your past in the past. But I think sometimes what's actually harder for us than putting a painful past behind us is actually putting behind a successful past. Now, some of you are young. You don't know that yet. All you know is a painful past because you're a teenager. And all your parents do is hurt you. And so you understand that life is all about pain. But there's going to be a day where you're going to have a moment you're thinking, oh, this is life. It's going to be the moment you actually get the girlfriend you wanted, or the boyfriend you wanted, or the job you wanted, or the career you wanted, and then you lose it. I don't know if there's any past that's harder to give up than the past that actually was the ideal future. And so there is this moment in the past that Israel was connected to that was both a moment of great pain, but also a moment of incredible power and freedom and success and deliverance. And God said, I need you to put the past in the past. And you stop living there. It's to me so interesting that in the last couple of months, I've gotten two emails that have actually really affected me. One was last night. I got one a few months ago, maybe a month ago, from someone who did something 20 years ago. They said something to me, and it was hurtful, and I just went on. I forgot completely about it. I never remembered it. But they've remembered it for the last 20 years. He sends me a long email apologizing, explaining to me why he said what he said. And the third reason was, and I wanted to hurt you. You know, one of the worst things in life is to try to impugn motivation on people. Don't try to assume you know the motives of people unless they tell you. And so I actually had never imposed that narrative. Oh, he was just trying to hurt me. I actually imposed the narrative, oh, he must be really hurt. And this is just a reflection of his pain, a reflection of where he's at, a reflection of what he's going through. And I'm just an incidental object of his pain. So I think by the next day, I forgot it completely, and I never thought of it again. And for 20 years, it has haunted him. And so he sent me a long, elaborate explanation, first of what happened, and then I remembered it. I've had no offense, and then I'm reading it, and I'm going, yeah, that's right. You did say that, you know? I knew you were trying to, you ever do that? And so it's like, I knew you were trying to hurt me. And so I'm reading this and go, oh, I remember. And then he went on to explain it, what? You were actually trying to hurt me, and that kind of hurt me. And then he went through and apologized and explained where he was in his life. And it was such a beautiful email, really. And when I responded to him, really my response was, my only regret is that you waited 20 years to be free of this. Because you need to put your past in your past or it's going to Destroy everything in your present and destroy everything in your future, because the worst thing in life is when your past becomes your future because you keep living in the past. But yesterday I got another email, and honestly, when I saw it, I thought, uh-oh, what did I do wrong? Because I live in that space. I know there's just someone that I've done something, I've offended them, I've hurt them, I forgot them. And so when I saw it, I thought, oh. And then there were two people with me, and they saw it, and they went, oh, why is he emailing you? And then I read it, and it was beautiful. I mean, it was beautiful. It was, today is the anniversary of something you helped me start 10 years ago. And I just want to say thank you. And then he went on and said thank you some more and some more. And it could have gone longer. It was okay. And I had time to read that email. And I thought, oh, here's the contrast. See, you're not supposed to live in your past. You're supposed to live from your past. You're not supposed to be trapped in your past. You're supposed to build on the past. And there's nothing you're not supposed to remember. Because that's the confusing thing about God. He brings this particular moment about the parting of the Red Sea when God set Israel free from Egypt, because this was the iconic moment in Israel's history. This was a defining moment about who they are as a people. And whether you realize it or not, you have moments in your life that are defining moments that define who you are as a person. And those moments didn't choose you, you chose them. And you think they chose you if they happened to you, but you actually chose them. Because you allow them to mark you, to define you. And that moment when God delivered Israel out of Egypt became a defining moment. And over and over again in the Bible, God says this, remember, 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 remember. And pretty much every time God says remember, it was that moment. And then God goes, forget it. Which one? Yes. Remember, forget it. That's what you need to do. You need to remember, forget it. That's right. Because the problem is when you're remembering the past, you're forgetting the future. You need to remember it to build on it, to build from it, to find strength from it. But you need to forget it when it traps you, when it holds you, when it captures you. Put your past in the past. And some of you, the essential step for you to be fully present in this moment in your life, to bring all of you to this moment, is to put your past in the past. And it can be both negative and positive. You can hear it. Some people, when you're around them, all they want to do is talk about their pain. And they're going to find other people who love talking about pain. Find out what people want to talk to you about, and you'll know what you talk about. There are other people who just want to talk about their past successes. You ever around them? If you have all day, they have all day to tell you about how awesome they were. They just have a hard time telling you what awesome thing they're doing right now. Put your past in the past, then you need to fight the fight you're in. Oh, this is why God, by the way, reminds them that dead people don't rise unless he decides. They lie down dead, unable to move. They're like an oil lamp with the flame snuffed out. Forget what happened long ago. Do not think about the past. Remember, forget. God's saying, look, the last battle was against Egypt, but your new battle is against Babylon. And I'm going to do this in a reverse order. See, I parted the waters to set you free from Egypt, but here I'm actually going to bring water out of the desert to refresh you and take you on a long journey. But what you need to do is recognize that you're not fighting the battle that you once were fighting. Because you can't win a battle against shadows. You know the problem with like regrets and bitterness is regret and bitterness are two ways of knowing you're fighting battles against ancient enemies. And what's crazy is you may actually be fighting against someone who's no longer in the ring. And you're swinging away and swinging away and swinging away. I remember years ago when I interviewed George Foreman. He's huge, by the way. And I'll start with the end. After the interview, we walked off the platform together down some stairs. And evidently, he has really bad knees because his knees have to carry him. I'm guessing the man may be 400 pounds. I'm not sure. And as we were going off the platform, I was next to him, and he decided that he needed something to support him because he lost his balance as he was stepping downward, and he put that giant hand on my shoulder. I looked like a Tonka toy, and he pressed on me so he would not fall, and I felt myself compressing like an accordion, and I thought, he's going to kill me in this moment, crush me like a can. But I survived. But I remember just a few minutes earlier, he was telling me about when he fought Muhammad Ali. And he said, I'm just pounding and pounding and pounding Ali, just pounding him and pounding him. And he just wouldn't go down. And I think it might have been the 10th round. He said, Ali leaned over to me and whispered, George, is that all you got? And George Foreman looked at me and he goes, that was all I had. And when he said that, that was the moment I lost the fight. And what's to me so amazing about George Foreman is he went on to become an incredible entrepreneur. He could have spent his whole life just reliving that one fight that he lost. He could have been forever defined by losing to Ali because he gave him all he had. And when Ali whispered, is that all you got? It was all he had. And what I really admired about him was when he got out of the ring, he just decided to take on new challenges. To teach us all how to make burgers. Who would have guessed that he could have found a new arena to excel? One of our friends here, Gabriel Rosado, who's been a boxer for years, and I've seen him fight live, and that man can take a punch. And it would make me anxious, because here I am ringside with him, and you know, I'm his friend, and I'm just watching him just beat a guy up while he's getting beat up. And I saw him the other day, and you know, he still remembers who he is, which I'm so happy, and he still remembers me. And I said, so Gabe, do you have a fight coming up? He goes, no, I'm laying the gloves down. I'm moving on. It's time for a new start, new career. And I said, I'm so happy to hear that. There are other things after boxing, and you still can think. You still have your brain. You still can make new choices. And I could tell it was hard. It's hard to give up what you know. It's hard to give up the fight you think you can win. It's so afraid. It's so terrifying to take on a new fight because you don't know if you can actually compete in that new ring. See, and in this moment, Israel, they knew they could win the fight against Egypt because God set them free, but they didn't know if they could win the fight against Babylon because God hasn't shown up for them. God is saying, you need to fight the fight you're in. What's the fight you're in right now? Is there something that happened in the past? I remember when I was in college, I was dating this girl who was an equestrian. She was one of those national equestrian champion type people. And she taught me all about horses and taught me how to ride open jumpers and how to do fox hunting and all these things. And so a lot of us on the weekends from Chapel Hill would go out to this ranch and we would ride horses and we just learned everything from her. And one day we went to her house to visit. And when we went to her house, there were paintings everywhere. But the paintings were all the same. All the paintings were from World War II, from the South Pacific. And they were all dark grays, except wherever there was an explosion. And every painting was the painting of naval conflict, of ships being blown out of the water. And I remember asking her, I said, these are really beautiful paintings, but why did you guys buy paintings that are all the same? She said, oh, no, we didn't buy them. Those paintings were painted by my dad. I said, your dad? She goes, yeah, my dad was in World War II. And I said, how's that possible? She goes, well, he lied about his age. He went out when he was a teenager. And so he experienced as a 15, 16-year-old boy what traumatized for a lifetime 25-year-old men. And so my dad, when he came out of the war, he lived with these nightmares throughout his life. In the middle of the night, he would grab my mom, she would say, and pull her off the bed and throw her on the ground and jump on top of her because he could hear the bombs coming. And this went on for year after year after year and decade after decade. She said, until one day my dad took a gun, put it to his head, and ended his life. Because you cannot win a battle against an ancient enemy. Because you need to know what fight you're in, because you cannot win the fight that you were in. You can only win the fight that you are in. And I wonder right now, if you are using your energy fighting a fight in the past, when you need your energy to fight the fight right in front of you. Now, let me tell you how we deceive ourselves about the fight. Whenever your life is about someone else, you're in the wrong fight. See, whenever you go, yeah, but they hurt me, you're in the wrong fight. Yeah, but they did this to me. Well, you're in the wrong fight. When I hear people go, yeah, but the church, I'm going, you're in the wrong fight. Because, by the way, church is just code word for people. Like, I don't trust the church. What you're saying is that you don't trust people. Because the problem isn't a church problem, it's a human problem. We just happen to be together right now. They go, yeah, yeah, but I don't, you know, trust. And they go, it's the wrong fight. See, the fight isn't to make the world trustworthy. The fight is to make yourself trustworthy. See, the fight isn't to make everyone else kind. The fight is to make yourself kind. See, the fight is not to make sure everyone else is honest. It's about you being honest. The fight is your fight. And everyone else is a part of your life story, but they're not your fight. And what we do a lot of times is we focus on what other people are not. We focus on what other people have done. We focus on how other people have let us down, betrayed us, lied to us, hurt us. And what it does is it allows us to abdicate the fight we're supposed to fight. It's the fight for us to be the person God created us to be. You need to be in the fight you're in. And the only life you have absolute control over is you. Oh, it's just so easy to go, oh, I just don't like people. That what that really means is you hate yourself. Because you find in people who you are. And the real fight is the fight within. And then he says, put away the former things. Do not dwell in the past. See, behold, open your eyes. I am doing a new thing. I love everywhere in the Bible where God says he's doing a new thing. I'm going to be honest. Because no matter how good the old thing was, I always need a new thing. How about you? See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up, but will you even perceive it? How is that possible? God is saying, I'm doing something brand new, but I'm not even sure if you're going to see it. God is saying, you need to see what you cannot see. So you need to put your past in the past and fight the fight you're in, but you need to see what you do not see. Because the reason we become so convinced God isn't present is because we're looking everywhere where God isn't moving. But God is moving. See, I want you to know that God's always creating. God is always ushering in the new. God is always moving us out of the past, through the present, into the future. And if you can't see God moving, it's because you're looking in the wrong place. And God begins to describe it. I think God is comic. I mean, he is a great comedian. As I've put roads in the deserts, streams in thirsty lands, even wild animals honor me. By the way, that's actually like sarcasm. God saying, you don't honor me, but wild animals do. And he goes, even jackals and owls. Like if I'm a jackal, I'm like, what did I do? Like, you know, I'm an owl, like, who? Like, you know, it's like, why pick on us? God's like, even jackals and owls know what I'm doing. How are you blind to it? In other words, God is saying, you don't need a higher level of intelligence or spiritual consciousness to know. You just need to open your eyes and look in the right direction. Because even the jackals and owls see it. So you go, I can't get it. I don't get it. I don't get it. Well, it's because you don't want to get it. You see, you may not like where God's creating the new because you don't want that to be the new. You want the old to be the new. See, and God's like, no, I'm not going to do the old again. I'm going to do the new for the first time. Do you want to wait for the old to come back, or do you want to step into the new? It is to me extraordinary how much faith is about the past instead of the future. It's amazing to me how so many people were so captivated by the words of Solomon when he said, there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, around the world, it seems like everyone knew Solomon's statement, there's nothing new under the sun, there's nothing new under the sun, there's nothing new under the sun. I remember when I was in my 20s and I started giving this group all these ideas, and this older follower of Jesus came up to me, he literally patted me. And he said, son, there's nothing new under the sun. No wonder Elon Musk wants to go to Mars. He's trying to get out of under the sun. And it's because Solomon said, there's nothing new under the sun, but God said, behold, I'm doing a new thing. So who's right, Solomon or God? Solomon, who woke up one morning going, there's nothing meaningful. Solomon is having the worst day of his life. Why is it that we are so inclined to believe the guy who is depressed, hopeless, and nihilistic? It's because it puts no standards on us. See, when there's nothing new under the sun, that's my excuse for there's nothing new in me. You're just spelling sun wrong, because there's everything new under the sun. And when Jesus comes into our lives, he makes everything new. In fact, that's what he says. If anyone's in Christ, he is a new creation. You have been made new. You are now a new story. You have a new heart. You have a new mind. You have a new life. You have a new future. There's nothing old about being connected to God. Yeah, but God was back there. Yeah, that's right. But he didn't get stuck in time like we did. I think God looks at us going, why are you still doing it that way? I love that. That's so 1870. That's so 2019. That's so pre-pandemic. Why are you living in the past? I think God looks at you and me and says, why are you living in the past? That's so you in your 20s when you were still stupid. That's so you when you had hair. That's so you before you learned and grew and matured and understood that life was more. You need to see what you do not see. And I looked through the pandemic and I realized that I began to see things that I did not see before, opportunities that were waiting for me, moments that were just waiting for me to step into them and make them monumental. It's and create momentum out of them. And I wonder, what is God doing around you that's new that you just aren't ready to see yet? Put away the former things. Do not dwell in the past. Behold, open your eyes and see, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up, but will you even see it? You know what God is saying? You need to be where you are. This moment, it will not become your optimal moment unless you bring all of you. Stop letting the past be your excuse for only being partially present in this moment. Integrate yourself. Stop dreaming only about the future and stop remembering only about the past. Be fully present in this moment. Build from your past. Create into the future, but be here now. And if God were looking at you in a conversation and he said to you, you're not here. Where are you? Where'd you go? See, I think what you need to do is step back and go, you're right. But I'm here now. I'm fully present. I'm ready to take on whatever challenge, whatever crisis, whatever circumstance. God, you can trust me because I am all in this moment. Let me tell you. And some of you have been convinced you're not enough. You've been convinced that you don't have enough talent, enough intelligence, enough experience, enough skill, enough whatever. But maybe the problem isn't that you don't have enough. Maybe the problem is that you have not been fully present with everything you have. So Stop worrying about how much you have. Start focusing on bringing everything you are, everything you have to this moment. And I'm telling you, if you will embrace the power of being fully present, it's almost as if God rewrites your past. Because when you live fully present, you begin to see your past as a training ground that made you who you are. And you become powerful and creative, and you begin to have force into your future. And your future is not incidental or accidental. It becomes the creative act of a person who is fully present in the now. Which, by the way, is who Jesus is. It's amazing to me that God could step into human history 2,000 years ago. That God could take on flesh and blood and walk among us. That he could live a perfect and sinless life. That his name would be Jesus, Savior. That he would allow himself to be crucified, buried, and raised from the dead. But I want you to understand something. What Jesus invites you to is not to receive who he was 2,000 years ago. He's inviting you to receive who he is right now. Because he's here in this moment, fully present, ready to change your life, ready to fill you with strength, with hope, with faith, ready to pour into you love and courage and life. And the same Jesus who gave himself fully 2,000 years ago, so that through his death we could live, is here in this moment, ready to meet you where you are and take you where you cannot go without him. Would you just bow your heads with me just for a moment? Just close your eyes just for a moment. This is your moment. No moment in your past and no moment in your future will matter more in this moment than now. This is the moment you have stewardship of. This is the moment that you can choose. And if you're here and you've never trusted Jesus with your life, if you've never crossed the line of faith and put your life completely in his hands, if you've never made Jesus your Lord, if you've never asked him to forgive you of your sin and to set you free, to give you a new life and a new future, I want to invite you to do that right now. I'm going to invite you to just pray a simple prayer. Just one sentence. Jesus, I give you my life right now. Just tell him. Wherever you are, Jesus, I give you my life. Jesus, I give you my life. In this moment, embrace the power of being fully present. Tell him, I give you all of me, Jesus, every part of me. My hopes, my fears, my dreams, my doubts. Jesus, I give you all of me. I give you my past and my future, my relationships, my career. Give them all of you right now. Jesus, I give you my life. If this is your prayer today, if in this moment, being fully present, you would say, today I give my life to Jesus. Today I've whispered this prayer, Jesus, I give you my life. I want to pray for you. If that's you right now, in this moment, I want you to raise your hand right now. Just raise your hand if that's you. Embrace this moment. This is your moment. Jesus, I give you my life. Right now, just hold your hand up. Let me see you. Beautiful. Ah, beautiful. I see you in the balcony. Beautiful. Father, I thank you for those who in this moment have opened up their lives to you. I pray, God, that you would sense that you are fully present in this moment. You are here for them. I pray that you would wrap them up in your love and let them know they belong to you. That you'll never leave them, that you'll never abandon them, that you'll always carry them into the new. For you make all things new. And I pray, Father, that each person here would stop allowing themselves to be dispersed across time. I pray that they would stop leaving a part of themselves in the past and stop sending a part of themselves simply to live an ethereal future. I pray that they would be fully present in this moment, that they might build on the past and create the future through the power of being fully present in this moment. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Can we just thank God as He is speaking and moving into all of our lives and hearts? I want to challenge you this week. I know when you get up, like some people are morning people like Kim. She gets up like at 4 a.m. to milk the cows, do whatever farm girls do. And then I wake up hours later that she makes me feel as if I'm a sluggard because, you know, the sun has already risen. I'm a little slower when I wake up. I see all my friends go, I got this technique. I just jump right out of bed. And I go, good for you. Good for you. So happy for your Instagram following. It's so beautiful. I just count from 5, 4, 3, 2, up. I'm like, yeah. I can do it in multiple languages and still stay in bed. But this is the one practice I want you to take on this week, okay? When you lay in bed, when you wake up in the morning, take a moment before you let life come at you. Take a moment and pause, take a few deep breaths, welcome God into your day, then say, I'm going to be fully present today, okay? So this week, just take on this posture and go, I'm going to be fully present today. Would you say that with me? I'm going to be fully present today. And if you'll be fully present, you're going to begin to discover you have power that you did not know. It's going to change not just your day, it's going to change your life. Love you guys. God bless.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Mosaic Podcast. I want to encourage you to take the message you just received and allow it to go deeply into your soul. Let Jesus do the deep work that only He can do. A special thank you to everyone who gives to Mosaic. Your sacrifice makes this podcast possible and creates life change all over the world. You can be a part of spreading this message around the world by going to mosaic.org/give. You can also subscribe, rate, and share this podcast with your friends and family. Thanks again for listening. God bless you.